Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share, and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, Griefsters. Thank you for listening. If you have been enjoying the show, please do feel free to rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe as well, as every podcast tells you. It helps other people find the show. Thank you so much if you've already left a comment. I do read them all. And I think it's really good to leave comments because it helps make people realise that the show is cheerier than it sounds, which the name of the show doesn't always encourage that. So thank you for pointing out that it's funny as well as poignant. This week, I'm talking to Dr. Shelley Gilbert, MBE. Shelley is the founder of Grief Encounter, which is a charity set up to help bereaved children. Shelley came in to talk to me about her mum, who died when she was 4, and her dad, who died when she was 9, and how that inspired her to help kids who'd been through the experiences that she had. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with Dr. Shelley Gilbert, MBE, who is the founder and president of Grief Encounter. Hi, Shelley.
Hi.
How are you doing? Or should I say Dr. Shelley at all times?
No, Shelley's right. Terrific.
What's your doctorate in? What did you get the doctorate in?
Unsurprisingly, it's in my favourite subject, which is talking about the psychotherapy of bereaved children and young people.
Wow. So you've got a doctorate in bereaved psychotherapy. What's the official title? Go on, yes. Give it to us.
My official title is Dr. Death.
That's a great title.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
He'd be one of my kids.
So Grief Encounter is a charity that supports children who've been through bereavement. Is that
yes.
Right?
Let me take you back to how we started.
Yeah, sure.
I was going to say I lost both my parents, but actually what I should say is I experienced the death.
Yes, that's the old vocab. It's tricky because I think lost has a nice, there is a nice sort of feeling about it of like, it wasn't my choice. There's something in lost, it's like, oh, I lost my parents. It's like, it's kind of soft, but I also swing towards my dad died. Because
yes.
I think when people say to me, when did you lose your dad? I think, it wasn't keys.
Like, yes, exactly.
He's gone.
Exactly. But spoiler alert, let's come back to that about the language of grief, because that's definitely one of my soapbox stories.
So both your parents died.
Mm-hmm.
And how old were you?
Well, my mum died when I was 4.
Oh, my God.
But nobody told me.
Whoa. Dr. Shelley, we've got to go back. So your mum died when you were 4?
Yes.
What did she die of?
She died of breast cancer.
Okay.
It wasn't even called the Big C in those days.
Yeah.
And people thought I was too young to understand. And there were lots of maternal figures already around. And also I began to understand that she'd distanced herself from me before, as soon as her terminal diagnosis happened. And I understand that as an adult. So
Yeah, because she was worried about what's going to happen when she goes. Yeah,
exactly. And even knowing what I know now,
God,
I couldn't say goodbye to my children.
Yeah.
It's just, also, you know, in something like 90-odd% of the mums I meet, or dads, I meet who are terminally ill, just hold the hope, and rightly so.
So no one told you she just wasn't there anymore? Or did anyone, did you say, like, where's mum? Or did anyone give you an answer?
I guess so. But I had a very, very strong relationship with my dad.
Right.
And what happens is your childhood's taken away overnight. So what I do remember is growing up very quickly.
Yeah.
And I literally ran the household with him.
Oh my God.
At 4 years old. So much to the point that things weren't great, but, you know, at the time I was happy running the household. And
yeah, I guess you didn't know any difference, right? Like, so it's just you're making sure your dad's happy, and that's normal, because if at 4, what else can you, can't really, I mean, do you remember her?
Yes.
Yeah.
But most of the memories are other people's memories,
photos
of her.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there are very few photos. And the odd memory. And the memories aren't necessarily comforting.
Yeah.
Because it's things like her distancing herself from me or telling me off or bringing the dog into the room. And obviously she wasn't allowed animals at that point.
Yeah.
They are comforting memories, but there's not enough of them.
Yeah, and it's difficult, isn't it, when you're a kid, obviously I was 15 when my dad died, but I remember a lot of arguments. And then sometimes I think, is it just because I remember the arguments that I think we didn't get on that
well? Yes.
Or were we, like, and then you try and it's really, memories are so fickle as well, when you're trying to find other ones and there's just blank.
Yeah, and that's another big soapbox of mine is about memories. And they're memories of the past, memories of the present, and the memories of the future. And are they your memories? And memories are so important to have validated.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, my one big memory is the night my dad died. And
so
actually,
how old were you then?
I was 9.
What? Oh, my God.
Yes.
Shelley?
Yes.
Fuck. Sorry, that's what I want to say. So you were 9. What happened then?
What happened then was, by some miracle, really, my last memory is a nice memory of making up an argument late at night, because he died in that during the course of the night, and I didn't go in for my normal morning cuddle.
Yeah.
And someone else, the housekeeper, came in and found him, and I was then again taken away from all the funeral rites, from all the bad stuff, and taken away to be with an aunt. And not told. I was actually the last person to be told about his death about a week later.
A week? What were you thinking that week? Were you just like, did you think you were in trouble? Or
No, not at all, not at all, because I was very close to my cousins.
Right.
And I spent all the holidays with them. So it was just more of the same.
What happened to your care after that?
Again, if you look back, it's kind of very grown-up thinking, was I actually thought that I could go back to my home, to my house in the West End of London. And I'm not quite sure who I thought would look after me.
Well, you run a household for that long. You must have, you probably Absolutely. Would have been all right, to Exactly. be fair. You might have got in trouble with some paying of bills, but like,
Probably not, but yeah, hey. That was obviously unrealistic. But what was also unrecognised was the powerful impact of all the other, what we call in the business, secondary losses, but they're not secondary losses, really. They're accompanying losses, I guess. I'd love other words for it.
You mean like the other, the family, the unit, sort of like the house and the housekeeper and all of that
the
stuff?
The family unit, the house, the school, the friends, and really your identity as you knew it. You know, who are you now? Who are you now? You're no longer daddy's girl.
Yeah.
Who are you now? You know, what title? You know, you're an orphan.
What did he die of? Did he just have a...
He had a heart attack.
Oh, God.
His valve failed, you know. And it's something now would be fairly routine.
Yeah.
But then, back in the day, it was fatal.
But that's really... What you're saying is very much speaking to me, because I remember after my dad died, the family sort of fell apart, my dad's family. And then his dad died 6 months later, pretty much of a broken heart is kind of what it looked like. And I remember feeling that, like my grandpa, and people not being around anymore.
Yes, and you lose the other people.
Yeah.
And you
and then it just feeling like there was this world and now it's gone. It's not just my dad that's gone. It's like everything, you know, going around to my grandparents on a Sunday and all the normality, and that being like as painful as that person not being there, because you're like, everything's gone.
Everything's changed.
All the things that were
and
there.
And that's the message that's so hard to convey. Your whole world is absolutely shattered, splintered, blown apart overnight.
Mm.
You're ill-prepared.
God,
I wrote something down for myself today, which was, it's like going back to touch without the tools and having to emerge from the emotional rubble.
That's how it feels.
These random thoughts.
No, I like it. It's definitely, I think, and this is the thing about being a child, a bereaved child. When you're an adult, there is another life, potentially. Obviously, I know everyone's different.
Yes,
but
you've
like
got a bank of memories.
Yeah, and you might have your own job or your own flat that's separate to that family.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say it's any easier, but I think as you're a child, like, your world is your parents. That's it. They decide your world. So when they change their world, it affects... as it divorced affects children, you know, like, not necessarily negatively, but these things will have an effect.
We're lucky. I mean, given your age, my age, most of the listeners, we are so lucky because we've lived in probably the longest peacetime in British history.
At the moment, yep.
Which is great.
Yeah, so far. Come on, guys, keep it together.
Generally. But the downside of that is the death denial society.
Yes.
You know, most of us have never seen a dead body.
Yeah.
Death's sanitised. We avoid the subject. And the sad bit about that is that we probably don't live life to the full.
Mm.
Whereas if you have the experience that you've got one life, it can be cut short, as you had, as I've had, as the bereaved children and families I meet have had, candle blown out too early, you learn very quickly that you're either going to sink or swim.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really important to not adopt a victim mentality.
Yes. Yeah, it's true, isn't it? Because it's not talked about. I definitely felt like I was a very unusual case in a way.
Yes.
Like, whereas actually it's not. It's quite common to lose a parent, you know.
Yes.
And, you know, everybody's going to go through it. It's going to happen. But I think because it's not talked about, you do feel very like, oh, this is a weird thing that's happened to me.
Yes.
And I was very lucky because I've talked about this before, but in my year at school, there was two other girls that lost their dads.
Oh, and you didn't talk to them?
No, so we did. One girl didn't want to talk. She just wasn't up for it. But my other friend, who I'm still very good friends with, Hannah, we completely talked about it. And she'd lost her dad when she was 8. So she was my, you know, the person that I am now for other people. She was my welcome to the club, how can I help you? And she would be like, every time I'd be like, I feel like this, she'd be like, yep, yeah, that's how you're going to feel. And it was, that really, really helped me because that made me think, oh, okay, I'm not completely weird. But I think if you live in a world where people aren't talking about it, it just, especially what I imagine what was happening at the time it was happening to you, you know, especially that society then. Because I think society now does talk about it a little bit more than they used to.
Okay,
I don't know. Perhaps, so, maybe not. Shelley's looking at me like, Carrie, you're naive.
So that brings up two key themes to me. One is time.
Yes.
And the other is talk to. What we're describing, I think, here is the total isolation.
Yeah.
And it's a bigger word than that, a deeper
word.
Yes, it is.
It's not enough. I completely agree.
It isn't enough. It's about how you are when you're born as a baby. And what we need to understand is that that's... One young person gave me a picture of being like a baby in the middle of a desert.
Mm.
And you're at, the feelings are of abandonment.
Yeah, yeah. God, I have the worst abandonment issues. I am not good with people leaving the room. Like, no, you know.
Absolutely.
Like, where are you going? Are you going to die?
Yeah.
Come back soon.
Exactly. Like, and the use of humour is fabulous with that. You know, like.
It does help.
My kids say, you know, well, I'm only just going out for a little while. Why are you sobbing hysterically and grabbing our legs as if you're never going to see us again? Well, I might not.
But and we talked about this the other week. Like, I mean, I'm in therapy at the moment and, you know, it's hard when you... Life is so much about evidence. So you learn, you're like, oh, that's hot, don't touch it. You know, okay, that's what works with a fire, great. And then I'm like, oh, parents can die at any minute, be prepared. Like, that feels to me like a lesson I learned. And my therapist is now like, yes, but you learn other things. I was like, no, but that was that was a key one. So that
exactly.
gives you that anxiety.
And we have to go, yes, but.
Yeah.
So just to backtrack a bit.
Yes, sorry. I feel like I'm getting into my own therapy session with you, Shelley.
Sorry, that's my fault.
No, it's good. I can't help it. Yeah.
Well, exactly as we, you know, ask a trained therapist to speak for an hour. It's rather difficult.
So your dad has passed away and you're now growing up. What happened as a teenager?
Yeah, so move on. I actually had very, very happy, secure childhood.
Yeah.
I was adopted by my aunt and uncle.
Amazing.
Had lots of friends, etc. I had all the social skills. And things were great. Unsurprisingly, I moved towards the helping professions.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it was only then I was able to actually have therapy.
So you didn't have any as a child?
Oh, ha.
Yeah. Nothing was offered, I imagine, back then. Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But what was offered was exactly what needed to happen without any of the textbooks.
Yeah.
Was the absolute safety and secure home and secure base that I had from my second mum and dad.
Oh, that's amazing. They were there for you, because I can imagine that's, if you don't have that, that is when you fall through the cracks pretty badly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that word to me has a capital F, which is family.
Yeah.
And that's my learning, the importance of family. And that's what I see with the bereaved children and young people I meet now.
Yeah. So you move towards like helping people, but you start having therapy yourself. So was that in your 20s?
30s.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, that's when I finally was like, I'm ready to deal with it.
Yeah.
I think you spend your, I definitely spent my 20s sort of aware of it, but not really sure how to unpack it. I was like, what do I do with it? Like,
exactly. So that was my work, was to start naming that.
Yeah.
And as I was learning more and more from myself, from other people, from other bereaved kids, and listening and helping people understand what was going on, I wrote a book to bring these ideas together called The Grief Encounter Workbook.
Wow.
Here's have you got I prepared earlier.
Oh, she's got
sorry,
one with
guys,
her.
You have to look at the website.
We'll take a picture.
I was totally wow. unprepared for the public reaction to this book.
Wow, really?
That was when we registered as a charity.
So you're trained as a psychotherapist for children who have been bereaved. That was sort of your specialist subject became.
Oh, a specialist subject became bereavement.
Yeah, yeah.
Bereavement and grief.
And then when it's...
I have noticed it in the profession. And it's we haven't quite unpacked this ourselves professionally. But most therapists I know enter into their discomfort zones.
Right.
Probably... because we are, unless you've experienced it, you don't really truly, unless you're exceptionally emotionally available, really, really have that deep capacity to understand what it's like.
Yeah, because I interviewed Julia Samuels. And she also, I can't remember the exact details, but her mum had a huge amount of death when she was younger, and then Julia then lost people and then lost people around her, died. And yeah, I think if you're not in the club, we call it the club. You're
the
not
club.
In the club.
The club that you don't want to be a member of.
But once you're here, hey, there's other people here. You're not alone. If you're not in the club, it's not like you don't understand, but I definitely wouldn't want a therapist that hadn't. And I've never asked my therapist, but I'm just, I just know. I just know she gets it. It's just the way she says things. I'm like, oh yeah, you get it. I think you sort of, like you said, the language you use.
Yes.
But it sounds like you had a bit like what happened to me when I started this podcast. I just thought, oh, well, you know, I honestly thought, oh, maybe 10 people will listen and I'll just do something else. And I got this overwhelming reaction of emails of people being like, oh my God, I've never heard, like this, I've been wanting this conversation and I haven't been able to have it.
Yeah.
And then that suddenly made me go, oh, right, okay, other people feel like I just assumed it was just me. So it sounds similar, like you didn't quite realise how much a need there was for helping children to talk about it.
100%, exactly. And that's the key.
Yeah.
It's about opening conversations, giving people opportunities. Because what has happened in our society is the loss of rituals and remembrances.
We talk about this every week, Shelley.
Oh, do you?
Oh, my God. Because my mum, when my mum lost her granny, she wore a black armband to school.
Yes.
And I fucking wish I'd had a black armband when my dad died. Like, I would have moaned and I would have been like, oh, don't want to wear it. But it would have made a lot more sense when I was then acting up in lessons, being kicked out. Suddenly, you know, like, I think it just would have reminded everybody, okay, this, she maybe needs help.
Yeah.
And we talked about this in another episode as well, of like, everyone says to you, oh, I'm here if you want to talk, but nobody talks to you as a child. You don't know what to say. You haven't got the words, but they all expect you to come to them with like, hey, you know, I've been feeling really... You don't have anything.
Exactly. You don't have the language. And that's lots of what we work on at Grief Encounter is the language of grief. And not that I have it. And it's very hard. And also we use any kind of appies, particularly, you know, creative therapies, art therapies, with children, adults alike.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in psychotherapeutic terms, you return to the basic fault. You return to... to pre-language, a state of pre-language, like a baby. And it's as if, you know, you're learning French or something totally new.
Yes.
You're in a totally, totally different new world.
Yeah.
And when we get there, those around us, most of us don't have that language of grief.
Yeah.
So that's one of our tasks. The other task is to actually think more about the theories of grief.
Yeah.
And that's one of the really strong messages in the book. And What I've done is rewritten the one of the theories or the theories and offer a much more user-friendly approach. And right. It's been very hard work finding a diagram or a metaphor. But this diagram is an upward spiral. And originally it was a spiral inspired by C.S. Lewis. But then that implied a circle meant going round and round. A spiral could also be a downward spiral.
Yeah.
So the message is not a downward spiral. Widows were saying to me, I feel worse 6 months on. And I'm going backwards. Yeah. I'm not passing through these stages.
I don't believe in the stages at all.
No.
I really don't. I think it's just
100%.
Bullshit. Like 100%. I've never met anyone that's like, yeah, I went through them, now I'm all right. Like, it just comes and goes.
Yeah.
And I think that's all I've learned through my experience and talking to people. It just seems like it just comes and goes. Like, it gets all, I think, as well. It's a bit like when it does come, because you've got through it before, you know you're going to. So that's what I think when people say it gets easier, what they mean is when a big wave of it, of crap hits you, if it's 5-10 years down the line, you're like, look, I know I did this before, I know I can get through this feeling. So that's all that makes it easier. It isn't physically easier to get through. You just know, but when the first time it hits you, you think, well, there's no way I'll ever get through this. This is the worst thing, feeling I've ever had.
Yes, exactly. So first of all, we want to lose this nice, neat stages.
Yeah.
Then we want to lose the tasks. The next bit we want to clarify is the difference between trauma.
Yes.
And the response to trauma.
Yes.
And the longer term, the more cognitive processing of grief.
Yeah.
So
I think trauma and grief get very mixed up together,
yes,
don't they?
Yes, they do. And that's why, you know, we're thinking 6 months on, I feel worse.
Yeah.
It's because you're actually beginning to feel.
Yes.
And
the shock is going.
The shock is going. If you feel survival, you think about the trauma, you're in survival mode.
Yeah.
You know, you can think to extremes of Holocaust survivor Primo Levi, or you can think to normal every day happening, or you listen to the Grenfell survivors.
Oh, God, yeah.
And, you know, I've listened a lot to some of the children, and they describe perfectly about this, the first reactions that are absolutely traumatic.
Mm.
And that applies to each and every one of our families I meet and the children I meet, is that whenever you get the news, whether it's cancer, long-term illness, or a sudden death, it's a shock.
Yeah.
And that shock actually is quite useful.
Yes.
And you can return to
it. I always say to people, like, the human body is amazing. Like, it knows you need to eat and sleep. So it protects you and it just puts you in shock so you can't feel anything.
Uh-huh.
But you can still carry
exactly.
on eating and sleeping.
Exactly.
Because otherwise, if you didn't have that, I think you'd just stop right there in that doctor's room and never move again. Like,
worse. And that's another thing is, as when you face death as early as we did, or as early as, you know, a tragedy, a young premature death, it becomes an option.
Mm.
And what we are propelled into is extremes. We live at the ends of extremes. So even in a day, death can hold no fear. It can hold terrifying fear that keeps you awake in the day and awake at night.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever read Judith Kerr's The Tiger Who Came to
Yes,
Tea.
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Now, if you read that, if you read the underlying themes of that, that's what it is. The tiger is in your bed.
Yeah.
The tiger has come to tea.
Making a bloody mess everywhere.
Making a mess.
Which is how it feels. You can't do anything because there's a bloody tiger in the way.
Correct.
Yeah, it's an amazing book, actually.
Yeah. So, you know, one day you don't have to live on high alert. You know, the tiger has gone around the
corner.
I long
for that day, Shelley, when I'm not on high alert. One day. Yeah, my therapist always says to me, let's think about an ordinary level of anxiety. And I'm like, what is that? What's an ordinary level?
Yes.
But, you know, it's all, you can work out how it's connected, but it's it makes sense. There's such a sense when you accept it. I think that's the thing. If you try and put logic on it, like, well, I shouldn't be scared or I shouldn't do that. This is crazy.
Yes, that's not helpful.
But you're like, yeah, somebody died. It's a lot to deal with. It's big.
Yes, and it's a big. And that, just to go back, you were talking earlier about questions.
Yeah.
And you're so full of these huge existential questions that not only do you not know how to ask, you don't even know some of the questions.
Yeah, you just have feelings, I think, when it happens to you when you're younger, and you can't put them into words.
Yes.
So that's very confusing to be like, I feel ennui. I have existentialists happening to me. But you don't know the words. You haven't read the philosophers. You know,
you're a kid.
You're just like, I don't feel great. But yeah. I don't have to tell anyone I don't feel great.
No. How dangerous. Life of Pi, wonderful.
Oh, I love that book, yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if it's the first time you've ever thought about that being put about parental death.
It's
huge.
It's got that incredible sentence in it, which I find really painful. That says, when your father dies, you lose the greatest teacher, but when your mother dies, the sun goes out of the sky.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's not even on the quotes. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's I use that quote a lot.
Because I think that's a very... Yeah, I mean, I don't want to... You know, I know gender is a social contract, but I definitely feel that with my dad, like... I did lose somebody who was full of information, and I know everybody's different, but I think that's it does capture it.
The ennui,
yes,
in the Life of Pi.
Yeah,
he also points out that boredom is death's greatest adversary, and I thought, wow, yes,
yeah, that's nice,
and I see that quite a lot in particularly young people. Okay, like. I don't care. I'm fine.
Yeah.
And in my doctorate work, particularly, there was this feeling of how life had become boring because mum was now depressed.
Grieving.
Christmases were different. Holidays were different. Everything was different. The fun has gone out of people's lives. Yeah. The humour, I'm just to come back to comedy, you know, people think you can't be funny, and you can. And one very poignant quote from a young man I met in one of our groups fairly recently, he said, I heard someone laugh and I turned round and I realised it was me.
Oh, wow.
I heard someone laugh I'd laugh for the first time since Dad died.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, you yummy little monkey.
Yeah.
You just, that's it.
We laughed a lot when he was ill, but I definitely remember like that feeling when your cheeks crack from like, because you're smiling and you're like, what's this? Like, because you laugh in that sort of dark humour way, but to actually smile and be happy is that I think obviously takes a lot of time. I remember feeling it, smiling at something, thinking, what's that? Oh, I'm smiling. Because that was nice, rather than like, it was nice, but it was tinged with absolute pain and agony.
Yeah.
Like, it was just nice. You can go two ways, as ever. I think you can be in a lot of pain or you can laugh about it. And I think I definitely came from a family that already laughed about
it. My message is everyone does grief differently.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's about a balance. You know, it doesn't have to overwhelm you, and we look for sign of stuckness, but it's so vital. It's not just important, it's vital to address the dark side.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
So grief encounter...
We do one-to-one work, but I'm most proud of the communities we create. So we bring kids together.
Oh, that must be amazing.
It is amazing because lots of it's verbal and lots of it's non-verbal. You know, sometimes we just have to be together just to know.
Yeah.
Or it'll be an exchange, or it'll be a couple of words which enables another deeper level. And if you think about the language we use with children, with young people, it's, oh, what shall I... Tell the children, okay, hey, what about telling them, what about listening?
Yeah.
And, you know, if I'm still on my mission, it's not about telling, it's not about listening, it's also about helping them process, helping make sense at a deep level.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's public or private, conscious or unconscious, you know, who the hell knows? But, you know, I know... Every young person I meet, that they're not fine.
Yeah, they're not. They're definitely not fine. They might say I'm fine.
Yeah,
but they're not fine.
Yeah, adults can be so quickly fooled.
Yeah,
you know, really easily fooled. Even myself at times, because it's about timing and trust. So you know, it's particularly important to make safe spaces for the kids and for young people and adults.
I definitely got very good at doing the fooling. Like, it was almost, again, you know, I'm an actor, so I was always good at pretending.
Mm.
And I sort of saw it as a bit of a, like, if somebody approached me who I didn't want to talk to, I could do a really good job of, like, if I was like, not you, you know, because sometimes, well-meaning adults would be like, oh, and how are you? And be like, yeah, great. And I got very good at saying the right thing. And you would see, I was talking about this the other day, I would watch their faces get relaxed because they would be like, oh, I'm going to ask her, you know, and how are you? And I'd go, oh, you know, yeah, I'm fine. And it's what he would have wanted. He was such an active person. And I think he would have really hated to be ill for a long time. And I could see them going, oh, great, she's fine.
Exactly.
Oh, great. And I'd think, great, job done. You are going to leave me alone?
Exactly.
Fantastic.
Exactly.
I don't want to talk to you.
And,
yeah,
you
definitely.
Know, and it's no wonder, you know, some of us are in the helping kind of professions.
Yeah.
Is because you get very good at holding adult emotions.
Yes.
And then no one asks you. People say, why? What took you so long? You know, what's the secret?
Yeah.
And it's no one really asked.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Like, I don't feel like anyone really wanted me to go into it. Yeah, not really. I mean, my mum was amazing, like, absolutely amazing. My brother, too. They were complete, like, I was very lucky that became my absolute unit, and I had them to talk to if I needed to. But I really wanted someone to, like, crack the shell. Like, when I said I was fine, what I meant was, come on, keep asking. Like, keep asking. And they would stop asking, and I'd think,
okay.
I sort of wanted you to, you know, like, it's quite difficult for me, so I was sort of hoping you'd ask again and again. And, yeah, you know, people just don't really ask you. Yeah, not properly, I think.
No.
Especially when you and when you were 9 and 4.
Yes.
I mean, it must be really.
And then you don't have the language.
Yeah.
Oh, not necessarily. And that language, you know, to me is about creativity. Winnicott's written quite extensively, and he might not immediately come to mind when we're talking about death and dying, but actually, you know, he was really, really big on this, and he said that we were disrupted or derailed or. I add the word, you know, at worst, destroyed.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm encountering at the moment, or have always encountered, suicide, the ultimate, where you destroy yourself. I mean, that just goes against the grain, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And also now murder. And if only these kids on the streets, you know, especially in the streets of London, why are we calling knife crime?
Yeah.
Knife crime? It's not. It's knife murder. And if these young people, sorry, I'm back on my sofa, but if these young people are only too aware about the impact and the consequences, I think they think twice. But.
So you run these groups.
So we run these groups.
What year did you set this up? Like, how long did it been?
We established this as a charity in 2003.
Yeah.
Because
I had the same concept with Julia Sammers, because she does Child Bereavement UK, another charity. But it was when my dad died in 1998, there wasn't anything. And it's interesting. Mm. So Grief Encounter was set up in the 21st century. And I feel like it's a tide that's turning, that people are now aware children need to be supported in a way.
It is. And together we can change children's lives. We need to carry on changing this mindset of death denial. And, you know, it's, people say, oh, yeah, we do. We always talk about Dad. We've got his photos everywhere. But it's also about your own memories.
Yeah.
It's also about this remembrance thing that we were talking about earlier. And it's also about not only the past and not only the present, but it's also about the future.
Yeah.
It's really important to
keep
that
on the agenda. Well,
you
must have found that. I mean, I talk about this a lot, that, like, my relationship with him has had to change, but he's not here.
Yeah.
So it's tricky, like, as you become, you know, went to university and I got married and I had a kid and he's not here, but I'm having to go, okay, well, now how do I feel about you? Now what would we have said? Like, that relationship with them does continue.
I think we have to spend more time on that, what what Winnicott calls what we call the transitional space between right. that trauma. We're pretty good at trauma work and rushing around with the food and, you know, how are you when people have just died?
Oh, yes.
We are pretty good at that in our society. But it's the what happens next.
Yeah.
The longer term work, the more cognitive processing kind of way forward.
How have you dealt with that? Your bereavement as the 4-year-old and 9-year-old, have you felt that relationship change with your parents?
Head? So it's about making better use as therapists, as family, as people on the streets, as friends, of that space between, of the transitional space. Like, I don't know what would be your most important objects, but, you know, there will be like a teddy bear, like a child has that transitional space, you know, like meet Mr. Goodgrief, he helps us out. He's very useful in transitional space, where a child can connect to the person that's died through something tangible. What my particular one is, my second mum, this is her engagement ring. And, you know, you have that juxtaposition. Do you keep it at home safely? Or do you keep it
next to you
at risk of losing that? And to me, that is a connection, a tangible connection.
Yeah, I've got a few, like not many, but a few things that I don't think anyone would even know that they were like tiny little trinket that my dad gave me when I was a kid when we were getting on. And that, or like I've got this like glass mushroom that's really not very nice. But I remember we were on holiday and I begged him to buy it. And he did. He relented, which is quite unusual. You know, normally it was like, oh, no, we're not getting anything. Get out of the shop. And he went, okay, I'll buy it for you. And my mum said that day, she had no memory of it. She was like, I didn't know he bought that. I was like, yes, we were in Turkey and I begged for it and he gave it. And it's something that, I keep with me. And I don't tell anyone, but it's just a very important object to me.
Yeah, and it's also a conversation starter or middler or ender with your mum, for example.
Yeah.
And to validate that memory or, just even start a conversation. Because people say to me, especially towards the end of life, you know, you can't have those conversations. Are you afraid of dying? Yeah, if you go move on and they've died, you know, I know you live with regret that you don't have those deep, meaningful conversations.
I think, when else are you going to ask? If they're dying, that's time to ask them. Are they afraid? Are you okay? Get in there.
Yeah.
Because they're going to die.
Yes.
That's when you need... Oh, I mean... I've only learned this the hard way. Like, any questions, get them out.
Yeah.
Like, do not be polite. Anything that, if you need to know where something is or what happened to somebody, definitely, especially with this weird family stuff, you're like,
And
you know, you always told me that grandpa, can we just clarify actually what happened? Yeah, if somebody's dying and you have the time, because some people, you know, we had the Mac twins on there, you know, they just got a phone call, their dad had a heart attack and dropped dead on the golf course. Like, they don't get the chance. So I do think the one benefit, there's not many, but the one benefit if your loved one is sick and dying near you, you can ask them stuff.
Exactly.
So if someone's listening and like they know a child that's been bereaved, what would be like, people always ask me this, so I'm asking you the annoying question. What would be your advice to approach someone, like a kid that's just lost someone? Is there like tips or easy things you can do to start that conversation or to be useful?
Yes. Easy. Okay. Let's
take
sorry,
that I
know.
It's big.
So, I think our tasks are threefold. I think the question you need to ask yourself is who you are to them.
Yes, that's a good one. Yes. Because sometimes people approach me I was like, I've never spoken. You're nobody to me. So, I think that's important.
Yeah, so sometimes nobody is a good person because you don't have to worry about...
That's true,
about their feelings like you do with, say, your mum or the other people who are grieving. I mean, that's very common is kids say, well, I don't want to upset mum, or dad or whoever. You know, they're upset anyway. And people will say to me, oh, I don't want to upset the children. And I say, they're upset.
I know, that's what I say. They're already upset.
They're already.
Because I say the same advice to when you're talking to adults and when people say, oh, I didn't want to, you know, what should I do if my friend has lost someone? I'm like, just ask them, just talk to them. Oh, I don't want to upset them. Their parent/sibling/child has already died. So you can't make it it's already worse. It's already shit. Yeah. So feel free to bring it up because it's already bad.
Yeah.
As long as you're sensitive, and if they say, I don't want to talk about it, don't be like, no, you need to talk about it. Like, cool, but yeah, it's already bad.
It's already bad. And then in the words of Aristotle about anger, you know, it's easy to be angry with someone. What's hard is to be angry in the right way, in the right time, to the right person. So that's the same about death conversations, or, you know, you can't expect someone to have deep, meaningful conversations in the middle of Sainsbury's.
Yeah, yes, yes. People do ask you, I definitely remember, like, you know, about to go in to an exam or something, someone be like, I'm so sorry about your dad, and me being like, and actually I had to do my I had to do my GCSEs about 2 weeks after he died, and I had to do my German.
Oh yeah, you get about 10% extra time now. It's very, very understanding.
I didn't get any extra time. I had to do my German.
Oh, we have moved on.
Yeah, we have. I had to do my German oral exam, but it was about you had to talk about your family in German.
Oh.
And so I came in and they were all so on eggshells, and they were like, you know, what do you want? And I was like, I've obviously prepared to talk about my brother. Like, I obviously haven't come in here. Meine Vater is like, you know, I came in with meine Bruder. I had worked out a speech because I knew I didn't want to talk about it. But they were so, oh, we're very sorry. And I was like, can we just get this German exam out the way before we get into what's happened to me? Yeah, it has to be a good time.
Yes.
Or even acknowledging, I know this isn't a good time, so when there is, I'm here for you.
Exactly. Yeah. And not to say, you know, say a teacher with all the best will in the world will say, you know, come and see me anytime. Well, that's just not a realistic thing to say.
No, I used to feel so annoyed when they said that. What does that mean?
Yeah.
So I have to decide. I have to be in at the playground thinking, I'm going to go and talk to Miss So-and-so, actually. Like, yes. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But what teachers are there in the front line of fire is actually acknowledge and refer you on, or an exchange of eye contact, just acknowledgement. We have timeout cards.
So you can say, like, I just feel I've got, I need to.
Yeah, or you don't even have to say.
I wish I'd had that. That would be amazing.
And the teacher can also use it to monitor, because also it's sometimes, you know, our kids use.
Yeah, to get out of class. Sure. But I would have loved that opportunity to just say, I just need to leave right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really hard to communicate. I just didn't know how to say it.
Yeah.
And
who was going to go with you?
Yeah.
And where you were going to go. And
well, this
what
is
you were
what
gonna do
I
after.
Used to then kick off, and I would then get sent out of class so I could get out of class. I didn't want to be there.
No.
You know.
No, and how can you concentrate when your head's full of all these huge worries?
Oh, God,
and anxiety.
Yeah, and emotions, just like, you know, and then someone's talking to you in German and you're like, I can't think.
No.
Yeah.
Or the opposite. You know, I actually became a reader
and
was an absolute star academic student because you know, that was part of it, was having to be good and
having
not upset to be interested and not upset anybody.
I think that's really interesting what you said there, is the acknowledgement. I think some people did do it. Obviously, it's easier to remember people who didn't, but I definitely, when people looked me in the eye and were like, I'm sorry, sorry your dad died.
Well, okay, you're sorry. What about me?
Yeah, but I would.
I'm pretty sorry.
Yeah, but I would appreciate that more than I would, oh, you can talk to me, or, it's the, I think, eye contact and just being like, I acknowledge that your dad is dead, because it was the not acknowledging it that I found so confusing.
Yes, and that's so common.
Yeah.
That's so common.
Yeah, to just never say it or be like, oh, we know you're going through a difficult time. You're like, why is no one saying, just say what happened?
Yes.
It's a bit, so then you think, is it shameful? Is it, why are we not talking about it? Like,
yeah.
You as a child.
It's so much part of your life and so much part of your headspace. And also about the language.
Yes.
Going
back to what we talked about.
Passed away and gone to sleep, and they're at peace,
God,
and they're with angels and in heaven. And I mean, look, we have to say something. So that's, you know, if that fits at the time, that's good enough, especially so for a young person.
Yeah.
You know, the star in the sky or heaven or at peace. A few quotes come to mind, but one is of a child who was told that grandma. Grandma was with Jesus.
And that's nice. Well, yeah, that's can nice. Jesus bring her back, please?
Well, yeah, there is that, actually. The child didn't say that. What the child is, was she nailed to the cross?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Okay, oh no. Fine. Or, you know, can we know kids are literal? So yeah. That one kid was told stories, you know, what happened and all explained to mum's body, and mum's body was this and that and the other. And a few weeks later, that child was able to say, well, okay, mum's body is X, Y, and Z. Where's her head?
Oh, dear. Fine. It's all of it. So, all know, of it.
Yeah, we don't get it right as adults. We get it wrong as well. And yeah. I think that's a big message as well. You know, it really is okay to say we don't know.
Yeah, it's okay to say I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
It is okay. And what do you think? And, you know, okay, you know, some might say, well, that's not likely. But, you know, draw that out. What is grief called? What does grief got? You know, look like to you? Jeff Brader, who's a bereaved dad and one of our ambassadors, he said to me, what is your metaphor, you know, for your grief? And, you know, that's such an interesting question to ask people, kids, grown-ups. My metaphor
that's really
was
good,
water.
Isn't it? Oh, right.
Yeah. Because water, we need water to survive.
Yeah.
But water fills every gap. Water can drown you,
yeah,
and water also keeps you alive. We're made of water. People say to me, it feels like I'm drowning.
Yeah.
Lindsay Nicholson calls it under the seabed. And that's how it feels, as if, you know, people can't understand you.
I used to feel like I had a big grey cloud in my head,
yes,
like around me. Like
in your
my head was, yeah,
in your so, around you, yeah.
So it was just like, it was in my head, and also when people looked at me, I felt like I couldn't see them, like I was in cloud. And then as if I was having a, you know, a bad time, it would get a bit smaller, but sometimes it would literally feel like there was still a cloud on my shoulder.
Yes.
So like I'm out and I'm out and party and it seems fine, but I'm still I have to still carry this cloud. Sorry guys, this is like, I can't get rid of it. Like,
yeah.
It felt like sort of a responsibility in a way, like a sort of like, yeah, I... It's just always comes
burden.
With me. Yeah, burden. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. I think those nature metaphors are very helpful because it is something massive and huge that you have no control over. So it helps to kind of put it on water or rain or clouds or whatever it is, wind, like to... It's something that you understand the power of.
And it's not about there's a quote, you know, it's quite a well-known quote. It's not about the rain. It's about how you dance in the rain.
Oh, that's nice.
It is nice, isn't it? And what I say is you can't change the past.
Yeah.
But you can change how you manage the future.
Yeah, which is really like, that's fundamentally how, I mean, that's processing grief.
Yes.
Because you can't change what happened to you.
You can't change.
But you can change, yeah, how you walk forward from it. And but it's hard. It's not easy.
It is not easy. It is not easy.
And it must be so hard for you working with small kids. Like, I can't imagine. It must be heartbreaking. But I suppose then do you, because you were that small child, do you sort of understand them? Like, I feel like if I meet a 15-year-old who's going through it, I'm like, yeah, I know how you feel. But I would struggle with someone younger.
You know, to me, young, old, everyone's
it's
the same.
It's the same, yeah.
It's something about having the courage to actually name the death. So there's nothing worse than telling someone something, trusting the information, and then they don't do the right thing with it.
Yeah.
So, for example, a child said to me, my daddy's died. So as an adult, okay, what am I going to do with that information? And I have the confidence to say something like, I know your daddy's died. What do you want me to, what do you want, you know, what do you want to say anymore?
Yeah.
So to open those conversations, not to shut those conversations down.
Yeah.
And you can do that too. And other people to do that.
Yeah, just to say, I know, that must be really powerful. To be like, yeah, I know he's died.
Like,
sometimes you want other people to say it because you're still in that shock of like, did it happen?
Yeah, and they're gone forever. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's, I mean, you know, it's just such a huge thing to deal with when you're, as you said, a child. It is huge as an adult as well. I'd never take that away. I know, having watched my husband lose both his parents as an adult, it's not any... Yeah. It's not easier, but just when you don't have language and the brain capacity yet to put what's happening to you. It's so difficult. But equally, yes, you get adults who don't have the words for it. It doesn't necessarily mean it gets, yeah, it's not, I'm not saying it gets easier, guys, if anyone's out there thinking I feel shit. It's all right, but
it does get easier, and it should get easier. Yeah. You don't want to be stuckness is the key.
Yes, I think that's,
you don't
important.
Want to be stuck in that pain forever. You can't,
yeah, you need to move through it, but it doesn't mean move it goes through. Doesn't mean it goes away.
Correct.
It might come back.
And if I said to you, you know, give me your pain, I'll take it away,
yeah,
you wouldn't give it to me.
No, I wouldn't, actually. I thought that I was like, one, I think, Shelley, you can't take it. But two, it's part of who I am.
Yes.
Yeah, it becomes your new identity, doesn't it?
Exactly. And it took me a long time to say that, because I know I'm a much better person. I would have been an awful spoiled brat. Some may say I still was. But, yeah, you know, and it's, you know, I'm sure you would say the same. It's taught me such lessons.
Oh, God,
the
yeah,
strength you can get through anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you, the worst possible thing has happened.
Yeah.
And that's difficult to say as well as a bereaved kid, because you don't trust the future, but it has.
Yes, yes. You think, don't say it too loudly in case something else happens.
Yeah,
but yeah,
exactly.
I know exactly what you mean. And I remember when friends would get stressed about things and I'd think, well, he should...
Oh, really?
No one's died.
Oh, exactly.
No one's died. Died means something else. And I remember breaking up with a boyfriend, and he was so devastated because I'm a bit of a catch. And I wasn't, guys. I was a very annoying teenager. And he was devastated. And I thought, no one's died. Why are you this upset? I couldn't understand his pain, because I was like, but I'm alive.
Yeah.
You could see me again. We might get back together. Like, I just couldn't comprehend other people's pain, light pain, I would think, for a long time.
Yes.
Thought, what?
Yes.
We're all here. We're all breathing. What's the problem?
Exactly. And when someone old dies, it took me 30 years to actually say, when someone old dies, it's sad. And I had that experience. You know, I really know how sad that is at a deep, deep level. But it's not a tragedy.
Yeah.
When we're experiencing premature deaths, like the ones we're talking about, sibling loss, parental or early parental loss, it's different. It's a tragedy.
Yeah.
And we mustn't lose sight of that. And also what you said right at the beginning, Carrie, was, you know, it is much more common than we're allowing ourselves to think.
Yeah.
And the government don't keep any statistics on bereaved kids.
What?
Do on divorce.
They don't keep any...
Why?
That's surely like a massive thing that happens and is important.
Well, apparently not. We're not even recognised as a vulnerable group.
That's... Shelley, I'm mad. But you're so vulnerable. Like, children of divorce have a lot to deal with, and that's a whole new thing, and it's difficult. But it's the exact same. If your parent dies or a sibling dies, you're a whole new world of vulnerable that needs special care.
Yeah, yeah. On PSHE and educational programmes, pardon the pun, but death is buried, like last lessons, after divorce and moving house.
Guys, that is insane, because it's going to happen to you. Like, it will happen. Either you will die or someone you love will die. That is life. That's crazy. So they don't really cover it in schools. Oh, I would have loved for a fucking lesson. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would have spent the whole time arms folded going, this is bullshit. But I would have been listening, because someone to talk about it like a normal thing.
Yeah. So, you know, thanks for finding your voice. because that's what needs to happen.
Yeah,
other bereaved families.
About it.
And if we don't speak out about how difficult it is, you know, who else is going to? I've relied on other people to do that.
Yeah.
That's not right. We need to rely on ourselves to do that.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. And I, you know, doing this show, I love it. It's not been easy. Like, there's definitely been times I'm like, oh, what have I done? Like, now I have to talk about it. I don't know if I want to talk about it today, but it has helped me immeasurably. And talking to people every week has also made me realise there's as much death as there is, you know, moving house and divorce, that everybody goes through these things. And it's made me feel so much more normal. Like, it's made my grief feel like less, like this weird thing that I have that sort of separates me from everyone, and made me go, oh, I'm just, the club is, you know, everybody joins it eventually. And, you know, we're just, unfortunately, we got here quite early.
Yes.
Which meant we got the best food because we were here early.
Yes.
Dr. Shelley Gilbert, MBE. Thank you so much for talking to me.
I think what I thank you for is not only talking, but listening, and listening at a very deep level. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
You can follow Shelley on Twitter at Grief Encounter, or you can head to their website, griefencounter.org.uk, where that gives you the opportunity to donate to them if you would like to help them provide more service to children, or if you just want to find out about the type of services that they do offer, check out that. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast, and you can email us thegriefcast@gmail.com. Music was provided by the Glue Ensemble, and the show was edited by Kate Holland, with thanks to Whistledown Studios. And remember, you are not alone.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.